There is a movement that has come to life in the last 5 years where many millennial men like myself become jaded with the modern world around us. And so we begin to fantasize about a time long gone past. We begin to dream about being a medieval peasant where we had our farm and our little wife, our little trad wife. We dream of living as a member of Julius Caesar's legionnaires who charge into Gaul. We fantasize about a time in the past and we create this romantic dream in our heads that allows us to cope with the fact that our lives are anything but a dream. Our lives are incredibly banal. There is no adventure whatsoever. There's no connection with reality. We are drowned in safety and comfort. These same men who fought in all these adventurous wars have created for us a world so comfortable that we almost feel disillusioned with it. We want to escape it. We are so safe, we are so successful, that we would rather dream of a harder time to make up for the fact that we don't feel any dignity in our current time. We look at our lives, we look at the way we wake up and go to an office job or a corporate job, or we do remote work where we sit at home all day, or you're someone like me where you talk to the internet all day, and we feel this is pathetic. It doesn't feel like an authentic, real life. There's no danger. There's no nothing in our lives that can justify it to ourselves. We go out and we can order food to our houses. We go outside and everything's like a playground. Everything's cushiony. There's police everywhere keeping order. We go down to the gym and we simulate stress by lifting our weights up and down and really control the repetition manner so we can become a parody of a man or something like this. And deep down in our souls, this gnaws away at us. Now, this is made even worse because we feel there's a lot of political and social pressure being put upon us men. We are told at every stop corner that being a man, being masculine, setting boundaries, fighting conflict, looking people in the eye, holding eye contact, shaking hands too firmly. We are told that this is all evil. This is all the cause of trauma and pain in the world. We are told to correct these behaviors inside of ourselves, to suppress these conflict-driven instincts inside of ourselves, to get our testosterone and crush those levels down until we turn into little golems that can be easily controlled by the manipulators, by the matrix that runs the world. And on top of this, we look at ourselves as Westerners, we look at ourselves as Europeans, and we see in the movies and in the media, people are spending all day saying that, oh, Europeans are terrible people, you Westerners are evil, you Westerners are horrible, you Westerners are to blame for all the tyranny of the entire world. You should have a negatively premised identity, you should be guilty, you should feel bad about yourself, you're ugly and horrendous and nasty and mean, and your religion is a religion of ignorance and tyranny, you're a bad person down to your very, very core, you should feel guilt and you should feel shame. And all of this stuff compresses together the comfort, the sterility of modern life, the loneliness and problems with setting up relationships, the negatively premised identity for being a man and then from being a Western European man. All of this coagulates into this terrible self-image that we develop. And there's no way that we can form an identity in the modern world that's empowering and strong, because nothing about it is empowering or strong or honorable or impressive. So what we do is we escape into history. Now, there is a good reason why we would do this. There is a very good excuse, because we are getting presented a social role, the castrati modern male. And we are told that this role and this world that we live in now is the pinnacle of history, is the peak. Before now, all history was pain and suffering and struggle and tyranny and strife. It was a terrible, terrible time, and we've now become enlightened and escaped all that. And this is, of course, a farce and a lie. And what exposes this as a farce and a lie is when you go back and you learn about history. You dive into the past and you study what history was actually like. And so you are told that nowadays we are free, for example. But then you go back and you study ancient Greece and you realize that the men who ran the Greek republics were free in ways that you couldn't even imagine. And all the ways that you are not. You go back and look at the early Roman Empire, or you look at the early American nation, the American Republic when it was getting built, and you realize that these guys paid between 5% taxes and 0% taxes compared to the 45% taxes that we pay nowadays. You realize that that kind of sounds like debt slavery, that people fought wars over tax levels that were that high. You go in, you look into the past, and you discover that an awful lot of our modern experience is actually exploitation masked in good propaganda. And then think about the negative identity that we get told as Western people. We are told that we are monsters and tyrants, and all we ever did in the past was be unimaginably nasty people, hurt impacting everybody all across the world. But of course, this is not true as well. You look through the past and you discover, you know, the Western Europeans are the people who end the institution of slavery across the world. They use their world domination to enforce higher moral standards upon the world. You look at the discoveries of science coming out of Europe. You look back at the Roman Empire and you see that they were lifting out of the darkness of prehistory a civilization of order and genius that allowed us to advance mankind forward, and they almost burst into a scientific revolution themselves. And you start to see all this and you start to realize that you are not quite the demon that you were sold as. In fact, your past, your history, your ancestors are something quite impressive, something you should be proud of, something that is maybe one of the best things that has happened in human history. And of course, this is great. We get a spiritual immune system because of this. When people try to demoralize us and install upon us a guilt-based identity, we can turn around and say, in my blood, I carry the legionnaires of Rome. I carry the grand European medieval knights. I carry the great, great people of the past within me. You cannot make me feel bad about myself because I am the gods. I am the ancestors manifest. But Friedrich Nietzsche comes along and piddles all over our little parade. And he points out a secret psychological neurosis that we have when we do this. You see, on one level, we are remoralizing ourselves. We are creating a positive identity for ourselves that we don't need to feel ashamed of. We are going up on Instagram and Twitter, putting our profile pictures as Spartan helmets, saying that we are these grand ancestors from the past. This is great. But on another level, we are escaping from reality. We are fleeing into the past because that's where we feel comfortable. Because that allows us to escape into a fantasy that makes us feel good about ourselves, because we cannot handle the reality that we actually exist in. Even though we have a profile picture or an anonymous account of being some Roman Empire up there on Twitter or something like this, even though we have these accounts and we think we're great because of them, we've got all of our followers because we make memes about Rome or make memes about Sparta, whatever it is, this is not what our lives are actually like. The people making these accounts, they live pathetic lives, hunched over, scribbling away on laptops, paying 45% tax to a government that they believe are tyrants that don't like them. And they can't do anything about it because they have no power. They're not Romans. They're not great men. They're not legionnaires of Julius Caesar's army. They are slaves to the modern regime. And their way of coping with this is by creating a flattering identity inside of their heads that they can escape to. And you and I do this as well. We want to go back and say, look at us, Julius Caesar. Look at me. I would be a member of Julius Caesar's army. But really, the role that we personify in the modern age is the peasant tilling the field. And this is the precise psychological cope that Nietzsche was criticizing and pointing out. He was saying that when we don't have the inner strength, when we don't have the will to power that possessed Julius Caesar, that possessed these great legionnaires, these beasts from the past, when we lack that, because we are castrated, cuckold, soy boy slaves of the modern regime, of the modern matrix, when we don't have that energy, what we choose to do is escape into a fantasy, to escape reality itself. We can't impose ourselves upon reality and figure out a way to make ourselves free or enhance our power in this real world or ascend from our social situation and become something more powerful and more manifest. We can't do that. We can't create a real world identity that engages with reality itself. So what we do is we escape into some type of intellectual fantasy. We escape into a world that flatters ourselves. We choose a delusion. We choose to romanticize. We spend all our time researching about Lord of the Rings. We watch load of Lord of the Rings movies and fantasize about this magical other world where everything is more straightforward and there's a clear binary good and evil that we can get behind and say that we're the righteous hobbits, and we can launch our emotions into this reality that allows us again to escape this other world that is not the real world, where we feel safe and comfortable and where the story is simple and it flatters us. We can go and we can study history. We can learn all we can about ancient Rome. We can learn all we can about the grandeur of Julius Caesar, the grandeur of Augustus, the grandeur of all this. We can go and we can celebrate how Rome used to beat up all its enemies. It was so badass. And we can project and say, God, yeah, I'm that Roman. You know, I'm one of these badasses that we Romans, Rome runs through my blood as a European. Yeah, we used to conquer everybody all around. But the fact of the matter is you haven't conquered anybody. You don't have any strength. In fact, people conquer you. And in fact, if you go and participate in your modern state army, you're probably going to die for some type of banking family of some sort anyway. You're not some badass participating in Julius Caesar's army. You have no connection to that history in the past. Instead, you are fundamentally a drone, a pawn that is put together in these giant welfare armies that go out and fight pointless industrial, military-industrial complex usury wars. There's no grandeur or magic in your noble fighting. You don't have any connection to this type of reality. Your reality is much more brutal and bleak, and you can't cope with that because you don't have the psychological strength. So you escape from this through history, through the past, through tradition, or maybe even fantasy itself, like Lord of the Rings. Now, to put this argument in summary, you are pathetic and weak. You are not an impressive man. You are not a great man. You're nothing compared to Julius Caesar. You're nothing compared to a Roman legionnaire. You can't fight. You can't publicly speak. You have no power. You are a tax slave for a modern regime. And you cope with this by going on to social media and changing your profile picture to some statue philosopher or statue soldier or warrior from a time long in the past that's so far away from you that you can project your insecure and inadequate fantasies upon them. This is what you've chosen to do. And then you start to go and promulgate these very simplistic thoughts like we should just return to the Roman Empire or medieval Christianity or something like this because those times in the past, they were good. They were the times when everybody was moral, everybody was stoic, everybody furrowed their brows and, you know, did the right thing, and there was no degeneracy and there was no ugliness and there was none of this disgusting stuff we see in the modern world. All the ills and pains of the modern world are a consequence of all these terrible things about modernity and all the terrible degeneracy and all these terrible things that have gone on. And the past was rosy and perfect and everybody just ran around skipping in meadows in sundresses, you know, girls with their milk jugglers just wobbling around, probably filling gallons of milk for you to drink, my man, and then the church would just give you your wife and then you wouldn't have to go and go through the stress and struggle of trying to find a girlfriend among all these modern worn out Miami hoes or whatever it is. Instead, you could go into the past and the past was perfect. There was none of this stuff about plagues. There was none of this stuff about, you know, the royals would get together on their cavalry horses, march in and steal your girl from you. There's none of this idea of invading armies coming in and raping your daughters and raping your wife. There was none of this struggle to eat meat consistently so that you actually ended up physically shorter. All of this stuff is pushed out of your fantasy because it's inconvenient, because it presents to you this struggle and pain and difficulty that you don't want to include inside of this. You ignore the fact that, you know, if you challenged the public consciousness, there would have been public executions for you. If you were, you know, doing science in your backyard garden because you're sort of an autistic person who was into experiments and stuff like this, that you might end up getting your skin flayed off you and ripped off you in public if you weren't careful. You brush over all this stuff because you would prefer the fantasy and the dream. You need this perfect image of the past in your head to deal with the fact that your life is inadequate in reality and you do not have the power to change that. Now, I love Nietzsche's writings on this. These are some of his most profound articles and essays where he discusses this. One of them is called The Use and Abuse of History. And he specifically refers to this issue where he would notice among philosophers or among historians or even among popular literature writers and people like this that they would go and they would look into the past and they would create a fantasy of the past that would be very useful for them in their modern era, for them in their modern time. Because the fantasies in our dreams, our relationship with the past is that we're trying to use it to help us deal with emotions in the present most of the time. It's very, very difficult for us to take an objective view, a sort of cold, dispassionate view upon reality, because fundamentally we're passionate beings. We're wrapped up in all sorts of emotions, and the politics of the day and the anxieties of the modern day are always going to inform how we interact with history. And to us as, you know, reactionary, right-wing, conservative trads, whatever you want to call us, we millennial men who are jaded with the modern world, all those emotions, all of our jadedness with the modern world is going to color how we interact with the past. And that's something that's actually stopping us from seeing the past as it actually is. And it's very difficult for us to be aware of that, that we're actually lying to ourselves. We are distorting the past and reality to suit ourselves. And it's only sincere, it might even be wise for us to be able to call that out inside of us. Now, the psychological answer to this is a brutal and harsh realism. This is almost like a Buddhist approach or a martial artist's approach to reality. You sit down and you cleanse your mind of all fantasies. You cleanse your soul of all these passions. You stop getting attached to these passions and you allow yourself to see them and observe them, allow them to flow through you, but separate yourself from them. And you sit down and you realize that you are malcontent. You are jaded with the modern world. You sit down and you look at your laptop and you realize you're disgusted with it. You're disgusted with yourself that you've got carpal tunnel syndrome from smashing away in this keyboard. You find yourself pathetic that you pay your 45% tax to the usurious regimes that run the world. You find yourself unable to cope with this and you feel yourself full of fury and anxiety and you are not happy with yourself. You find yourself disgusted with who you are. You believe you've been failed by your society and your family, and you are angry at the world for giving you this negative identity, and you become conscious of all this. And you realize that all these emotions are pushing you to escape into some type of fantasy, some type of delusion, some type of world where everything is better, everything is glistening. It's the opposite of this reality. It's some magical world that you can run away into. Of course, this is the Roman Empire, or as we said, medieval Christianity. And Nietzsche, like a Buddhist or like a martial artist, as I said, is encouraging you instead to take that fury and that energy and try to project it onto the world around you. Try to engage with reality around you. Try to launch that will to power inside of yourself, that aspiration for you to become a commander, a manifester of order like Julius Caesar, instead onto this world. What, look at the world around you as it is, and what can you do to shape that more in your favor? How can you fight with this world? In what ways can you project your power onto the world? How can you lift this reality you're in up to a higher level? How can you impose your creative instincts upon this reality? It might not be as flattering. You might not be able to grab a big shield and go charge out with a broad sword and take on the clear, obvious enemy. Unfortunately, you live in a different world. Maybe what you need to do is you need to go and hit the gym, as we say, or maybe you need to go and learn martial arts, or maybe you need to go and learn skills like how to speak better, how to present yourself better. Maybe you need to go and network with the correct amount of people in order to make you manifest yourself and make yourself a useful person in the world who is well connected. Maybe you need to go learn business skills or something like this. Maybe you need to go master the pen instead of the sword. Oh, sadly, I'm afraid you might have to learn how to speak in a style that's suitable towards millennials and the internet and these types of things. Maybe you need to go and learn how to engage with the real world right in front of you and learn how to bend that to your will and come out as a winner. Now, this actually has a profound effect on people's psychology, because instead of you sitting around and talking and complaining and whining about how the world is not perfect, how the world is not as moral as it used to be, how the world is not as kind or righteous or honest as it used to be in the past. Instead, you throw all that stuff out because, first of all, that's not even true. The world has always been much more savage than you'd like to believe. It's only your fantasy that is making you think that the world was better in the past. But more so than ever, you cast that out because that world is gone. It's not even the world you're dealing with right in front of you. You live in a globalized, digital, post-industrial society that has not been on this earth before. You're in a new world, and that's the world you live in. There is no legionnaires marching around that you can just go along and join. It is a different reality altogether. Now we're in the reality of TikTok and YouTube. You can become wealthier than a king even in the past by using these types of assets. It's not as sexy. It's not as profound. You don't get to deck yourself in gold and cut off somebody's head and build a cape full of scalps and flatter yourself and say you're a big badass. You don't get to do that stuff anymore. But that's because we live in a different world. But instead, if you can can throw all that stuff away, throw all those fantasies and delusions away and engage with this world, that's a sign of strength. And that's actually how you win. And that's how you embody the same energy that these great characters like Julius Caesar and all these badasses had in the past. They were much the same. They were embracing the reality that was right in front of them. A lot of people don't know this, but Julius Caesar didn't really start his great war career till he was in his 40s. And during his late 20s or 30s, he came across a statue of Alexander the Great, and he fell down at the foot of the statue crying. He was in tears because Alexander the Great had conquered the entire world by the age of 32. I think it was the same age as Caesar. And Caesar felt ashamed. Caesar had done nothing. Caesar wanted to be like Alexander the Great. Caesar was caught up in this fantasy of him being a great, powerful Greek hero like Alexander the Great, taking over the whole world. And when he came across the statue of Alexander, he felt inferior. He felt pathetic. He felt like nothing. And he felt low. He probably said to himself, oh, well, this is so terrible. I have no opportunities. I wish I lived in ancient Greece where things would have been different. And of course, then that's how I would have won under that situation. But he got over that part of himself. He threw that part of himself behind and he engaged with the world as it was. And then later in his 40s, he ended up broke in massive amounts of debt, which Alexander the Great never went through. But he turned that situation into his great destiny deciding moment. And this is where he was able to get the loan of a couple of legionaries to go up into Gaul and then conquer all of Gaul and set him on the path to becoming Julius Caesar. And see, this is the thing, you're not that much different than Julius Caesar. You know, you were the same man with the same anxieties, the same problems. And you're even doing the same escapism. But you don't live in Julius Caesar's world. You don't live as a, you know, inheriting general who's about to take over the army and can go and conquer South America or something like that. It's just not your reality. Instead, you're somebody who's struggling with a porn addiction. You're somebody who's struggling with these identity crises of living in a giant globalized society that's fraying at the seams. Social institutions are breaking down. It's not the same situation. But the answer is the same. Instead of lamenting and pining about it or escaping into some type of fantasy of a perfect world, you must seize it by the balls. You must grab reality and understand that the life in front of you is what you need to affirm. You don't need to escape into the traditions of the past. You don't need to return to something. You need to understand that the world as it is yours for the taking. And every great man in the past that you idolize was not some romantic, out-of-touch, delusional person. Instead, he was the person possessed by that realism who grabbed reality and bent it to his will. That's the type of person that wins. That's the type of spirit that is necessary. It is not the escapist, romanticizing idealist. It is the grounded realist who grabs the real world and launches themselves upon it and affirms it as it is. And only after that person makes history do you go along and read the history books and, like a little boy, fantasize about that and build this big dream inside of your head and think that this part of yourself that dreams, that gets caught up in fantasizes, that romanticizes, you think that's the part of you that is going to achieve the same results. And it is not. Fundamentally, the romantic side of you is the part that loses, the part that is out of touch with reality, because it is unbecoming of a man to fantasize. If you're in a war, if you're in a boxing fight, whatever it is, if you're in some situation of conflict and your coach or your general catches you dreaming, fantasizing about something other than the reality in front of you, they will slap you across the face and say, wake up. There are bullets flying. Wake up. Stop getting caught up in a dream. This guy is coming out and he's trying to break your jaw. He's trying to give you brain damage. Focus on the reality in front of you. Stop getting caught up in delusions. Delusions get people put into hospital. Delusions get people killed. You have to get more serious. If you don't get more serious, you're going to get people hurt, and that's not a joke. It'll either be you or it'll be all your teammates around you. Wake up and come back down to the real world and engage with it. And again, this is all built on such a genius insight from Nietzsche, where a fantasy that supports our emotional ability to cope with the stresses of reality is something that we're going to choose to believe in more than reality itself, more than truth itself. Because truth is not useful. The truth, reality, these things have nothing to do with us being able to survive. If the truth of the world is that, you know, lions murder gazelles and no God comes down and punishes the lion for this, instead nature rewards the lion for this. If no God comes and punishes all these people who are enacting usury upon us, none of that stuff is easy for us to digest. It's very, very hard on our self-image and our ego and our pride and our ability to stay moralized, to believe in ourselves, to think that we are weak and we are pathetic. It's hard to be self-critical. It's hard if you're a fighter, if you're a boxer. It's very, very difficult to sit down and take the punch in the jaw. This is something that it's, you know, a man has to do if he wants to be successful. He has to turn around and be like, I'm not good enough. It's hard to say to himself that I'm wrong. I'm the one who can't throw the jab fast enough. I'm the one who can't slip the punch and come back with the counter cross. I'm not fit enough. I haven't done enough running. I don't eat clean enough. It's very hard to do that. Instead, the natural instinct within man is to blame the other people, to say, oh, he's evil. Oh, he's bad. Oh, I wish he was different. We have this propensity towards wishing that reality was different because we're too weak to accept that we're not good enough for reality as it is. And we can take that criticism in order to transform ourselves. And so you see this instinct manifest where we create any type of fantasy that's going to allow us to cope, allow us to deal with it. But Nietzsche's pointing this out, that that's a signal of weakness. If you are strong enough, you're not afraid of reality. You're not afraid of the brutal, bleak situation right in front of you. You're not going to have to romanticize the situation, because if you have enough strength, you can actually enact your will upon reality. He called this the pessimism of strength that he saw inside many great cultures, like, for example, the ancient Greeks. They had this ability to accept the world as it is, tragic as it is, and say, well, you know what? It is what it is, and I'm going to launch myself upon it and beat it into submission and transform it into the world that I want to see. And I'm going to idealize it. And this is the true idealizer. This is the true romantic, I guess you could say. The person who has the strength to accept the world as it is and then say, I'm going to make it. I'm like an artist who's going to craft it in what it should become. Instead of the fantasizer, the coper, the person who says, oh, well, one day I'll get it done. Oh, I wish things were different. Oh, if things were different, well, then I'd make a great world. Well, then I'd be a great artist. Well, then everything would be moral and perfect. It's all escapism. It's all a sign of mental weakness. If you saw this inside of a fighter, you would say that guy's going to lose the next time he steps into a ring. If you were talking to a fighter and his mind was in such a place that he was saying, you know, I wish the other guy was just nicer. You know, I wish the other guy would just not, like, you know, hit so hard. You know, my dad was such an awesome fighter. You know, it's just like, I don't even need to train because my dad was such a badass fighter, you know. If he was saying all this type of stuff, you'd be thinking to yourself, man, I'm putting my money on this other guy. You go talk to the other guy and he's like, yeah, well, I've been watching the way he does his footwork. I've been watching the way he is good with his right hand. I'm not very good with my right hand, so I'm going to train that. I'm going to work on my kicks because he's obviously very weak to kicks, but I'm not very good at kicks. If he was talking about all this engagement with reality, you'd be saying to yourself, all right, that dude's going to execute this other guy. He's going to cut his head off because he's engaging with the real world. He's cutting out the fantasies and going straight into what is right in front of him and making sure that he engages with the reality as it is. And so when you understand the framework of this psychological pattern, you can begin to see what's going on with many of these traditionalist LARPers, many of these romantic escapists. And you begin to see that an awful lot of it is coming out of a position of deep, deep weakness, deep lack of strength, deep inability to confront the real world as it is. And a clear signal that whoever these people are, they're going to lose, they're going to fail. Whatever their goals are, their projects are, if they're here to save Western civilization, they're not going to save it. They're not going to achieve any of that stuff. They're going to go and dance on TikTok pretending that they're a Spartan or something like this. They're going to go and they're going to write strongly worded posts on Twitter. They're going to go on Instagram and say that, like, oh yeah, well, I want to live in a field and tow the fields and stuff like this. They're going to go and they're going to play pretend. They're going to play into the delusion. They're going to break down the how Lord of the Rings works and all the archetypes. They're going to write their theses and big long explanations about morality or whatever it is. They're going to do all that stuff because that's emotionally satisfying for them. It makes them feel that they're participating in their delusion, but they're not engaging with the world as it is. They're not doing what is necessary to win in this reality. They're not building up a cynical relationship with the world. They're not going and saying, how do I manifest power? How do I build a network? How do I develop skills that are useful for me to succeed? How do I go and actually create things and create institutions that are going to serve me and my people in order to bring us to the future and allow us to win? How do I engage with this world right in front of me as it is? They don't think in that way. Now, an awful lot of these people tend to be quite stupid, because when you're weak, it's usually because you're not smart enough to be able to process the reality in front of you. You don't have the IQ, and so you get traumatized and you escape into a simpler version of reality where everything is quite easy. So an awful lot of these people get very upset when you confront them with this very sincere criticism, very obvious thing, just like if you were a coach for a boxer and you were trying to slap him in the face and be like, get back in the game, get your head in the game, stop being somewhere else. And if he started to bite at you and give out to you, you're like, well, there's no hope for this guy. Well, an awful lot of these people who are like, I'm out here to save Western civilization, I'm out here to save the West, you bring these points up with them. How are you saving the West by trying to say that we should all go back to ancient Rome or something like this? They get mad. They start to bite at you. They start to say, why are you taking this fantasy away from me? Because the fantasy is all they have. They're not interested in winning. They're not interested in success. They're not interested in reality. They want the dream. They want the fantasy. They don't care where it goes. For them, it's not about success. It's not about winning. It's about emotions. It's about how they feel. It's about how they can deal with the sad, tragic situation they find themselves in. But there's nothing in this that should be considered admirable. And in fact, one of the greatest examples of this comes from Nietzsche himself, where he developed many of these thoughts. And he developed them in relationship to the German people and the German people's grave mistakes that led to Germany getting destroyed in 1945. You see, Friedrich Nietzsche spent an awful lot of time around Richard Wagner, and he had the little love hearts in his eyes looking up at Wagner, being like, he's so talented, he's such a badass. Richard Wagner would have appeared like maybe Andrew Tate or Eminem or some type of character like this, where Nietzsche was a little like a member of Hustlers University, being like, oh my god, he's so cool, he's leading the culture and all this stuff. And eventually, Nietzsche was spending time with Wagner and noticing that there was a few things that he felt were very off with him. And over time, he began to categorize it and understand it as this romantic desire inside Wagner. Wagner was trying to create a giant fantasy. In some sense, this is exactly what Wagner was. He was an artist who was weaving this profound fantasy. So Nietzsche began by seeing Wagner as a genius who was producing this new vision of German identity that was going to bring us into the new Dionysian future, and the German people would rise up and become the Übermensch of the future and lift us forward into a great culture. But over time, Nietzsche began to realize that this was not a signal of the great strength of the German people, that the great strength of the German people had built up and it was now exploding, blossoming through someone like Wagner, who was giving it a vision, an identity. Instead, he realized that he was actually looking at the cope of the German people, that the German people were at this point where they were very, very strong and had a huge amount of potential, but they weren't in any way defined. That potential was not in any way settled. It was merely potential. It was a huge amount of potentiated strength, but it was volatile. It was dangerous. They were going into a new world that was going to be very crazy, and a lot of powerful forces were going to be unleashed, especially in the 20th century. And the great responsibility for them was to actually try to transform that potential into actual success. That was the great thing, that they had all this potential and they could transform the world and lead that project. But they had to make sure that if they want to transform that potential into success, they had to make the right grounded actions. This was Nietzsche's big critique. And he started to get really worried that what he saw in Wagnerism was the Germans deluding themselves. They were like a very good fighter who had a great potential to have a championship career, who got so caught up in the dream and all the bullshit that, you know, his friends was telling them, that they started to believe in their own bullshit and their own marketing and their own propaganda. And so Wagner comes along and he makes this big sort of Christian pagan blend of German identity, where you have Siegfried and you have all these badasses, and the Germans are all these magical people coming out of the forest, and they're so amazing, and they're representative of this, like, you know, great Aryan man that is coming forward into the future. And it's all this building up of this fantasy that's obviously very flattering to the ego of the German people. And Nietzsche, you'll notice in his writings, is horribly harsh on the Germans, because he's like that coach who's sitting down with them and saying, turn off this fantasy. What are you doing? Stop saying to yourself you're the best fighter who's ever lived. There's clear mistakes that you are making. Humble yourself for a fucking second and look at what you're doing wrong. Pay attention to your mistakes. And Nietzsche criticizes them really harshly. He calls them cabbage head. He calls them frigid and autistic. He calls them all these types of things to try wake them up. He also gives them these compliments about having all this incredible potential. He loves the Germans. And he criticizes them with this severity because he wants to make sure that they do something with this. But instead, the Germans get caught up in this fantasizing. And then, of course, this doesn't serve them very well. Because what happens in the 20th century is they spend all that potential in imprudent ways. Obviously, the 20th century is more complicated than the Germans just making mistakes. But it does end up in 1945 with 2 million German women getting raped by the Soviets, Germany getting carved in half, and their potential destiny, they're essentially get spiritually castrated and destroyed. Even to this day, you talk to Germans and they don't really believe in themselves anymore, because the consequence of what happened was just so severe, so final, that their potential was annihilated. They didn't get to decide the future of the world. Instead, they have been essentially wiped out of world history, and their influence is just not that relevant. They're like Carthage in relationship to Rome. Rome went forward into the future. Carthage, we barely even remember at all. And this happened to the Germans. The Germans were wiped off the map and destroyed. And a part of this was their building up of impulsiveness, their building up of these fantasies. One thing that people often criticized the Germans for was underestimating the Russians, the USSR. And Nietzsche talks about this 40, 50 years before this even happened. It's actually an astounding passage in Beyond Good and Evil 251, I think it is. And he talks about how the thing the Germans need to develop is this cynical, pessimistic humility and patience that the Russians and the Jews have. That these two people are very realistic, very down to earth. They're also very slow, and they don't really like, they're not really like as idealistic and brave and profound as the Germans are. But Nietzsche was pointing out that maybe in the next century, the virtues that are going to be the most useful actually are these patient virtues. This is what will be helpful. To try to be a bit more cynical and realistic is going to be much more useful in the future. That's going to be the deciding factors about the people who win. But instead, the Germans were impulsive, getting caught up in their profound belief in who they are and all this stuff. And eventually they surrendered to that. Their nature is not something that they really changed. And Carl Jung, Nietzsche, all these people, they were warning against this. None of their warnings were heeded. And they all said, you know what, we'll just charge into Russia and the Russians will just fall apart in the first year of the war. And they very nearly did. It was very, very close. Maybe the Germans made a good guess. They almost like reached in there and took down the Russians, but they didn't. It fell short. And at the very start of that war, the very start of World War II, when they were blitzkrieging out across the east, everybody thought that this was the end of the war, that they were going to beat down the Russians. But it just didn't happen. And like Napoleon, Hitler once again, charging into Russia, eventually the cold, hard reality fell. And it all became clear that they were fucked. And then from that point forward, all the fantasies, all the dreams, all the romantic, all playing Wagner while you're driving your Panzer tank, blasted out of your face on stimulants, going to, you know, create the new German Empire in the world, the Third Reich, and spread it all across the world. All of a sudden, all those fantasies, all those dreams were proven incorrect. And they failed and they became weak. And they were in for a four-year beating. Like the guy in the UFC, like Conor McGregor fighting Khabib, where he gets taken down to the ground and all he can do is just lie there and try survive as Khabib beats his face in, because he had been filling his head with bullshit and he'd been surrounding himself with yes men coming up to this. And this is exactly what happened. And it's all like this emotionalism, this desire to fantasize and say, I'm a great Aryan man, or we're Julius Caesar, or we're these badass traditionalists from the medieval Christian. It all feels great. I know it feels great. I love doing it as well, pretending I'm a Roman Empire. It's great. I'd love to dress up as a Spartan every day. And it's nice now for me in my comfort to get all these visions and get all these nice feelings. But when it comes down to the actual rubber hitting the road, and when this stuff is put to the test, and when these delusions carry you into these situations like conflict and war, and all of a sudden the bubble bursts and you realize you were wrong, and the cynical person who remained disciplined and down to earth gets the advantage over you, and they begin to punish you, then it comes home. And then it's not nice. Then it's brutal in the harshest way it could be. Then that's when rapes happen. That's when murder happens. That's when 10 million Germans were murdered in this, well, they died in a war, you know, like they were killed in this war. That's a lot of the best men to come out of this nation. And so all of a sudden, all these supermen that they were talking about got wiped out in this giant mincemeat grinder of the Eastern Front. Now, what do you do about that? If Nietzsche saw the end of 1945, if he was still alive in the 1950s, it would have been his prophecy completely fulfilled. He was saying, you have so much potential. Don't get caught up in your fantasies and you'll actually do something with it. But they did not listen. And so it all got wiped out. It all got destroyed. And that's a tragedy. The potential in the German people was massive, and it was spent and wasted because of their inability to tame this impulsivity. And that's what a serious person takes out of these things, is that if you're going to try do something great, surely these fantasies will come up. But if you actually want to see it through to the end, you're not going to allow yourself to romanticize. If you want to become the champion in the fighting arena, you're going to listen to the person who's trying to wake you up. And if you're strong enough, you'll be able to engage with that. But if you're not, if you need these fantasies, that's a bad sign. That's the beginning of losing. And Nietzsche saw this in Wagner. He spotted it early. This is why he's a genius. He saw that all this stuff about playing Flight of the Valkyries, it's not going to go anywhere good. It's going to get us into a mess if we're not careful. And that's exactly what came through. Now, another example of this that hits closer to home is Andrew and Tristan Tay. Now, I understand many people get very wound up about these guys. These terrible men doing all these terribly bad things. Human trafficking. And all this stuff. This is what they're getting accused of. And I see it an awful lot coming from these like traditionalists and these right wingers that Andrew Tate is immoral. Why are these conservatives celebrating Andrew Tate? Andrew Tate's a horrible person. Andrew Tate's an immoral man. They get all, you know, uppity and stiff and all this, and they say, oh, he's a terrible Christian or whatever it is they're trying to say. He's not someone who's going to save us from the Matrix. And you see again the betrayal that these online social media addicts do with their ideology and their whining and their complaining. They have a voice on social media where they can dress up like Marcus Aurelius or something like that, or make a stoicism account and then spend their time, or, you know, talk about the 300 or talk about how, like, you know, Western identity, we're going to do all this type of stuff. And then they spend their time bitching about somebody like Andrew Tate without realizing that the past was not some glossy, moral, you know, choir of angels walking around. People didn't walk around in the past floating without touching the floor, going to the bathroom and just, you know, whoosh, nothing coming out, no smells or anything like this. This is not what the past was like. Andrew Tate putting girls on webcam is not unusual compared to what you saw in the past. Julius Caesar was not some paragon of, you know, pious. He wasn't a good Christian boy going into church, taking his communion, doing his confession. Julius Caesar went into Gaul, murdered all the men, and then took all the women and sold them into sex slavery. He sex trafficked all the women out of Gaul. And you're there with some profile picture of Julius Caesar talking about how you're a badass, going to take over the world, how you're going to return the West to morality and all this, without understanding what the West is, without understanding what the past is, without understanding what you're trying to bring back. This is something Nietzsche was so perceptive with, so good at seeing, pointing out that we have this problem with us moderns, where we project so much of our personality onto the past. So you have all these modern people, these historians, reading about history, projecting their modern moral frame onto history, and completely misunderstanding what history was. If you look at the movie 300, for example, the Spartans are presented to you as freedom fighters against these tyrants, Xerxes the tyrant, you know? So Xerxes is this big globalist, terrible, you know, he's the big, the Matrix. Xerxes is coming in and he's like, I'm part of the Matrix. I'm here to pull you out of Hustler's University. I'm here to take away your Christian values from you. I'm here to destroy your constitution of little Sparta, the little Republic of Sparta. And it's presented to you in 300 that, you know, Leonidas is this proud, moral, freedom-loving man, and he's going and he's collecting his 300 freedom-loving patriots to go and fight against Xerxes. This is what you see on screen. But the reality is not this at all, because the Spartans were a slave state. They had a underclass of people called the Helots that they used to routinely send their boys out to go murder with impunity as training to teach them how to keep the Helots in fear and teach their boys how to develop the cold-blooded ability to kill. The Spartans built their republic on oppression and slavery and restriction of rights. It was a caste system. This is what they had built in there. And when Xerxes was coming over, I'm sure Xerxes was just saying, well, you're not any more moral than we are. It was not some discussion about morality. You're just weaker than we are, so we're coming to conquer you because we're trying to absorb you into the Persian Empire. And we look back on this and we try to spin for ourselves a story that flatters our egos, a romantic story that's not connected to reality at all. And you see this again and again and again. You see these terrible tyrants, immoral bad men like Tate, taking girls and exploiting them and all this terrible stuff. And that's all well and good, but when you've got a Julius Caesar profile picture, when you've got some type of Roman Empire on your profile picture, you are invalidating your perspective on this. Because the Romans were monsters as well. They weren't moral people. There's none of that in history. History is not a moral story. History is full of savagery. You see exactly what our nature is like. People being like, Genghis Khan is so badass. I bet Genghis Khan would deal with these woke tards. I bet Genghis Khan would go and crush all these pride flags. Yeah, Genghis Khan is such a badass. And then you start throwing a tantrum about Tate. I'm pretty sure Genghis Khan probably raped the most people a man has ever raped in human history. Yet people are running around, you know, blowing bubbles about him or something like this. What is going on with these people? It's crazy. The Romans went into Corinth in the Greek city and castrated all the men, killed them, and then took all the women and human trafficked them off to the extent of the Roman Empire. They gave them to all their aristocrats and their elites. And it's hilarious how attached people are to these delusions. You would explain all this stuff to them. You would say, well, you know, the Romans were pretty monstrous as well. Nietzsche would say that they had a clear conscience about their true monstrous nature. They could act beyond good and evil. They weren't caught up with all this moral nonsense that we try to project upon the world that we do as moderns. And you point this out to people and people say, well, you know, Julius Caesar murdering all those Gauls, you know, mass raping all these women. Julius Caesar was doing this because, you know, he was building a great Roman civilization. You know, Julius Caesar was special. Julius Caesar was different. You know, it's like a girl who's like with a guy who's abusing her. And she just keeps on coming up with this rationalization in her head about why he's different, why he's better, because they can't overcome the fantasy. They can't overcome the dream. And so it's like, yeah, Julius Caesar was he had a different heart. He meant different. He was building up Rome. He's superior to this. He's not an immoral and horrible person. He's a much more better man. And I know he did all those terrible things, but, you know, for a greater good, you know, for the greater good of building up Rome. This is the type of somersaults people do to try escape from embracing and affirming the natural morality of life. Instead, they have to create all these schemas, all these little rationalizations and stories in their head, because the story they have in their head about morality is what justifies their pathetic state. They create some identity inside of their heads that there's all these terrible people destroying Western civilization, and they, little old them, who's too much of a coward to go do anything about it, writing on their laptop in their wimpy little job, paying their taxes, well, they're secretly the moral man. They're secretly the good person. They're secretly the true freedom fighter. That's their little story. And they're the person who resists going out there and sex trafficking people. They're the ones who are like, you know, all the women are just launching at them, jumping in the room, trying to be like, please put me on webcam. And they're like just shoving them out, being like, go away, you ho, stop, you silly girl. They're above all that stuff. You know, they're resisting all that. They're not out there. They're just, you know, if they wanted to, they could go out and they could just kill everyone. They could just go out there and they could just organize an army tomorrow and take over the whole world if they wanted to. But they don't do that because they're moral, because they're good. And instead they sit and they make their little Instagram profile or whatever it is, and they create some type of fantasy about them being a badass conqueror in the past. It's funny how the natural morality always finds its way to sneak in. And they talk about how they're going to take over the future and they're going to enforce morality and all these degenerates that they see in the modern world. And they start to build up this big romantic fantasy, because it's all they do. They sit around all day, you know, filling out Excel sheets so they can pay the government 45% of their life force. And then in their spare time, they allow this fantasy to just build up inside of their head. And they talk about how, you know, they think about how they would be the hobbits and Sauron would be so terrible and evil and it's all great and this type of thing. And they think about how, you know, how Julius Caesar and them are going to go around and end degeneracy in the modern world. Now, let me bring all this to a conclusion, because what I'm pointing out here, what Nietzsche was criticizing when he brought this up, and what I'm trying to illustrate to you in our modern examples, is that the thing that you must do on first principle is cultivate the strength within yourself the spiritual strength to face the ugly truth of reality, the unromantic reality right in front of you. You're an office worker. You are stuck in a government system that taxes you very heavily to pay off these giant debt funds that probably is not exactly, you know, good for you and quite exploitative. You do live in a reality that's a globalized digital world. There are airplanes. There are internet things. People don't dress up in armor and run out and do duels one-on-one to the death to fight for honor. None of those things exist anymore. That stuff is not here. What is here is a different world. And this world in front of you, maybe you want it to be a different way, but you have to accept this world first before you have any chance in changing it. And you have to learn to embrace this world. And this world is not all evil. It's not all bad. The modern world certainly has its problems, but the past was not any better. The past was not more moral. The past was not more angelic. The past was not more, you know, fun or kinder or cool. The past was savage in different ways. We have a savagery living secretly inside of our age that's kind of hard to see, but it's there. But the past had its savagery. Maybe it was a little bit more out in the open, but that didn't make a difference for the people there. There was lots of people who would have caught a disease. You could get leprosy in the past and be screwed for your life, and there's nothing you can do about it. Nowadays you get these things and they have pharmaceuticals that can clean it up in a couple of months. That's amazing. That's such a good thing about the modern world. But on the flip side of the modern world, the pharmaceutical stuff can quite quickly turn into a psychosis and be a tyranny upon your life. The fact of the matter is that there's never going to be a perfect world. There is only this world, the ever-shifting chaos of samsara, and it's on you to find the strength within yourself to launch yourself upon it and beat it into submission, to whip samsara until it turns into something more ideal, to craft samsara and create such a vortex of strength in yourself, in your friends, and in your future that you see manifest a man so strong that he is beyond man, that he is able to overcome suffering. And the only way you will do this is not by dreaming about the Superman all day, not by getting all caught up in romantic fantasies about being more powerful than everybody else, but understanding that there's a world right in front of you that can be idealized, that can be shaped into something great. We could do something as historically profound as Rome. We could leave our mark on history. We could impress our handprint into bronze, into the tablets of eternity, and people could remember us forever. But we have to understand this life that we're in right now. We are not in the Roman Empire. We are not in medieval Christianity. We are not in the past. We're right here. And we're here, and we can go towards the future, but we cannot go back. And you must understand that those instincts inside of you that want to escape, that is your weakness. You can crush that out of you, and that is the path towards you creating more strength. You engaging with this world right in front of you and doing something with it. And this might be one of Nietzsche's most genius gifts to idealistic creators. These are the people who create the future, and very much that is who I am. I am a romantic idealist. I love dreams. I love the past. I love Lord of the Rings. I love escaping into fantasies. I spend so much of my time fantasizing. But I know from coming across this that I need to balance that out with a grounded realism, with a connection to reality. I need to stop projecting my fantasies onto the world, and I need to engage with the real world as it is. And this is something that Nietzsche is genius at. This is actually what Zarathustra manifests and represents. Zarathustra is the prophet of the grounded idealist, the realist who can dream, the person who has grand fantasies but stands firmly on the earth and is prepared to actually make them happen. In the words of Zarathustra, he says, "Man is a rope stretched between the beast and the Übermensch. He is a rope over an abyss, and this abyss is dangerous to cross, and it is dangerous to look back, and it is dangerous to stand still, tremble, and hesitate. But what is great in man is that he is this bridge, and he is not the end. What is lovable in man is that he can go over and beyond, but he can also go down and into. I love those that know not how to live except as those going down, because they are the ones who will make it over. I love the great despisers, because they are the great adorers, and arrows of longing for the far-off shores. I love those who do not first seek a reason beyond the stars to go down and become sacrifices, but sacrifice themselves to the earth, so that the future world of the Übermensch may come to pass. Here he is speaking to the idealists. Here he is speaking to those special people, the creators of the future, who have this hope for the future, who despise the world, the great despisers, because he sees, he understands them, because he is one of those people as well. And he realizes that they hate the world around them. They find it disgusting and petty. They find it degenerate and unideal. It is a shocking thing to see when you realize what the world is. But he says that because they have such strong capacity to hate, they also have that ability to love. They are the people who can get enraptured by grand fantasies and grand dreams. And he only hopes that they see these dreams true to manifestation. He loves them because they are the ones that can go down and engage with the world, because they will be motivated enough to dive into the world, grab the world, and try to lift it towards something. They will be the ones who make it over. They are the ones he loves because they have that capacity. That is the mindset that he is looking for. And that is something that all you need to do is choose to install.